Sedai went over everything again and again, and then again. Egwene could not understand. With anyone else but Aes Sedai, she would have said they were nervous, calm faces or no. She began to wonder whether she was making some mistake, and started emphasizing different words. "Say them as you were told," Carlinia snapped like a cracking icicle, and Mirella, sounding hardly less cold, said, "You cannot afford a mistake, child. Not one." They put her through it 5 more times, and when she protested that she had given back every word correctly, listed who would stand where and who would say what just the way they had told her, she thought Morvryn might box her ears if Baonin or Carlinia did not first. In the event, their frowns were as hard as slaps, and Shiriam looked at her as if she were a novice being sulky. Egwene sighed and began yet again. "I enter with 3 of you escorting me." It was a silent procession that made its way through the nearly empty, moon-shadowed streets. Few of the scattered people still out so much as glanced at them. 6 Aes Sedai with 1 lone accepted in their midst might or might not be a common sight here, but apparently it was not odd enough to occasion comment. Windows that had been lit were dark now. Quiet lay on the town, so their footsteps sounded distinctly on the hard dirt. Egwene fingered the great serpent ring, firmly back in place on her left hand. Her knees were trembling. She had been prepared to face anything, but her list of anything had never included this. In front of a rectangular 3-story stone building they stopped. The windows were all dark, but by moonlight it had the look of an inn. Carlinia, Baonin, and Anaya were to remain here, and the first 2 at least were not much pleased. They made no comment, as they had not back at the house, but they adjusted their skirts unnecessarily and held their heads stiffly erect, not looking at Egwene. Anaya stroked Egwene's hair soothingly. "It will go well, child." She carried a bundle under her arm, the dress Egwene would put on after everything was over. "You are a quick study." Inside the stone building a gong sounded deeply, once, twice, a 3rd time. Egwene very nearly jumped. Silence for the space of a heartbeat, then the gong repeated its brazen song. Mirella smoothed her dress unconsciously. Once more silence, followed by the triple call. Shiriam opened the door, and Egwene followed her in with Mirella and Morvryn on her heels. The way they surrounded her, Egwene could not help thinking, was like guards set to make sure she did not run away. The large, high-ceilinged room inside was not dark, far from it. Lamps lined the mantels of 4 wide stone fireplaces, and more lined the stairs leading to the next floor and the railed walkway overlooking the room. A tall branched stand lamp, mirrored to increase the light, stood in each corner of the room. Blankets tacked over the window kept all that light in. 9 chairs made a row down either side of the room, facing inward in groups of 3. The women in them, the sitters for the 6 Ajahs represented in Salidar, wore their shawls and dresses in the colors of their Ajahs. Their heads swiveled toward Egwene, faces showing nothing but cool serenity. At the far end of the room was another chair standing on a small dais more like a flat box. A tall, heavy chair, the legs and uprights carved in spirals, it had been painted dark yellow in imitation of gilt. A stole lay across the arms, striped with 7 colors. It seemed miles from where Egwene stood to that stole. "Who comes before the hall of the tower?" Romanda demanded in a high, clear voice. She sat just below the golden chair, opposite the 3 blue sisters. Shiriam stepped smoothly aside, revealing Egwene. "One who comes obediently, in the light," Egwene said. Her voice should have been shaking. Surely they were not really going to do this. "Who comes before the hall of the tower?" Romanda demanded again. "One who comes humbly in the light." Any moment this would turn into her trial for pretending to be Aes Sedai. No, not that. They would just have shielded her and locked her away until time, if that was the case. But surely... "Who comes before the hall of the tower?" "One who comes at the summons of the hall, obedient and humble in the light, asking only to accept the will of the hall." Among the greys below Romanda, a dark, slender woman stood. As the youngest sitter, Kwamesa spoke the ritual question that dated to the breaking of the world. Are there any present save women? Romanda flung back her shawl deliberately and left it over the back of her chair as she stood. As eldest, she would answer first. Just as deliberately she unfastened her dress and pushed it down to her waist along with her shift. I am a woman, she pronounced. Carefully, Kwamesa laid her own shawl across her chair and stripped to the waist. I am a woman, she said. The others rose then and began bearing themselves, each announcing, once she was showing proof, that she was a woman. Egwene struggled a little with the snug bodiced accepted's dress that had been found for her, and had to have Mirella's help with the buttons, but quickly they four were as bare as anyone else. I am a woman, Egwene said with the others. Kwamesa walked slowly around the room, pausing before each woman for an almost insultingly direct stare, then halted in front of her own chair again and announced that there were none present but women. The Aes Sedai sat and most began pulling up their bodices. Not in haste, exactly, but few wasting any time either. Egwene almost shook her head. She could not cover until later in the ceremony. Long ago, Kwamesa's question would have required more proof. In those days, formal ceremonies were held clad in the light, which was to say in nothing but your own skin. What would these women make of an Aiel sweat tent or a Shinaran bath? There was no time for thought. Who stands for this woman, Romanda said, and pledges for her heart for heart, soul for soul, life for life? She sat erect and supremely dignified, her plump bosom remaining bare. I so pledge, Shiriam said firmly, followed a moment later by the strong voices of Morvryn and Mirella in turn. Come forward, Egwene Alvir, Romanda commanded sharply. Egwene walked forward 3 paces and knelt. She felt numb. Why are you here, Egwene Alvir? She really was numb. She could not feel anything. She could not remember her responses either, but somehow they rolled from her tongue. I was summoned by the Hall of the Tower. What do you seek, Egwene Alvir? To serve the White Tower, nothing more and nothing less. Light, they were going to do it. How would you serve, Egwene Alvir? With my heart and my soul and my life in the light, without fear or favor in the light. Where would you serve, Egwene Alvir? Egwene breathed deeply. She could still stop this idiocy. She could not possibly be up to actually. In the Ammerlin seat, if it pleases the Hall of the Tower. Her breath froze. Too late for turning back now. Maybe it had been too late in the Heart of the Stone. Delana was the first to stand, then Kwamesa and Janya, more, until 9 sitters stood before their chairs signifying acceptance. Romanda was still firmly in her seat. 9 of 18. The acceptance had to be unanimous. The hall always sought consensus. In the end, all votes were unanimous, though it could take a great deal of talking to make it so. But there would be no talking aside from the ceremonial phrases tonight, and this was one short of outright rejection. Shiriam and the others had ridiculed her suggestion that that might happen, and did so so quickly that she might have worried if the whole thing was not so ridiculous. But they had warned her almost in passing that this could occur. Not a rejection, but a statement that the sitters who remained in their chairs did not mean to be lapdogs. Only a gesture, a token, according to Shiriam. But looking at Romanda's stern face and Lilaine's, scarcely less so above her bare chest, Egwene was not certain of that at all. They had said it might be as many as 3 or 4, too. Without a word, the standing women retook their places. No one spoke, but Egwene knew what to do. Her numbness had vanished. Rising, she moved toward the nearest sitter, a sharp-faced green named Samalin who had stayed in her chair. As Egwene went to her knees again in front of Samalin, Shiriam knelt beside her, a wide basin of water in her hands. Ripples danced on the surface of the water. Shiriam appeared cool and dry, while Egwene was beginning to glisten with sweat, but Shiriam's hands were trembling. Morvryn knelt and handed Egwene a cloth, Mirella waiting at her side with lengths of toweling over her arm. Mirella looked angry for some reason. "Please allow me to serve," Egwene said. Looking straight ahead, Samhain raised her skirts to her knees. Her feet were bare. Egwene washed each foot and patted it dry, then moved to the next green, a slightly plump woman named Malind. Shiriam and the others had given her all the sitters' names. "Please allow me to serve." Malind had a pretty face with full lips and dark eyes that looked as if they liked to smile, but she was not smiling now. She was one of those who had stood, but her feet were bare, too. Every sitter's feet were, all the way around the room. As Egwene washed all those feet, she wondered whether the sitters had known how many would remain sitting. Plainly, they had known some would, that this service would be required. She knew little more of how the Hall of the Tower worked than had been in that novice lecture. For all practical purposes, she knew nothing. All she could do was go on. She washed and dried the last foot. It belonged to Janya, who was frowning as if thinking of something else entirely. At least she had stood. And, dropping the cloth in the wash-basin, returned to her place at the foot of the rose and knelt. "Please allow me to serve. One more chance." Once again, Delana was first to rise, but Samhain was right behind her this time. No one sprang to her feet, yet one by one they stood, until only Lelaine and Romanda remained sitting, looking at each other, not Egwene. Finally, Lelaine gave the ghost of a shrug, pulled up her bodice unhurriedly, and rose. Romanda turned her head and looked at Egwene. She stared so long that Egwene became conscious of the sweat running down between her breasts and along her ribs. At last, in stately slowness, Romanda reclothed herself and joined the others. Egwene heard a gasp of relief from behind her, where Shiriam and the others were waiting. It was not over, of course. Romanda and Lelaine came together to lead her up to the yellow-painted chair. She stood before it while they pulled up her bodice and draped the stole of the Ammerlin seat around her shoulders, while they and all the sitters said, "You are raised to the Ammerlin seat, in the glory of the light, that the White Tower may endure forever. Egwene Alvear, the Keeper of the Seals, the Flame of Tar-Valon, the Ammerlin seat." Lelaine removed Egwene's great serpent ring from her left hand and gave it to Romanda, who slipped it onto Egwene's right. "May the light illumine the Ammerlin seat and the White Tower." Egwene laughed. Romanda blinked. Lelaine gave a start, and they were not the only ones. "I just remembered something," she said, then added, "Daughters." That was what the Ammerlin called Aes Sedai. What she had remembered was what came next. She could not help thinking it was payment for easing her way through Tel Iron Riod. Egwene Alvear, the Keeper of the Seals, the Flame of Tar-Valon, the Ammerlin seat, managed to sit in that hard wooden chair without letting herself down gingerly and without wincing. She considered both triumphs of will. Shiriam and Mirella and Morvryn glided forward. Whoever had gasped, there was no telling now by their serene faces, and the sitters formed a line behind them, stretching toward the door. It was done in order of age, with Romanda at the very end. Shiriam spread her skirts in a deep curtsy. "Please allow me to serve, Mother." "You may serve the tower, daughter," Egwene replied, as gravely as she could. Shiriam kissed her ring and stepped aside, as Mirella made her curtsy. Down the line it went. There were some surprises in the arrangements. None of the sitters were really young, despite their Aes Sedai faces, but pale-haired Delana, whom Egwene had thought must be nearly as old as Romanda, stood less than halfway down the line, while Lelaine and Janya, both quite pretty women without a touch of grey in their dark hair, both came just ahead of the white-haired yellow. Each made her curtsy and kissed Egwene's ring with absolutely no expression, though some did glance at Egwene's banded hem, and left the room by a rear door without another word. Normally there would have been more, but the rest of the ceremony was to wait on morning. At last Egwene was alone with the three women who had pledged for her. She was still not sure what that meant. Mirella went to let in the other three as Egwene stood. What would have happened if Romanda hadn't stood? Supposedly there would have been one more chance, one more round of foot-washing and asking to be allowed to serve, but she was sure that if Romanda had voted no the second time, she would have the third. "Then she very probably would have been raised Amarlin herself in a few days," Shiryam replied. "Her or Lelaine." "That wasn't what I meant," Egwene said. "What would have happened to me? Would I just have gone back to being accepted?" Anaya and the others came hurrying up, smiling, and Mirella began helping Egwene out of the banded white dress and into a pale green silk that she would wear only long enough to reach her bed. It was late, but the Amarlin could not walk about in the dress of an accepted. "Very probably," Morvryn answered after a moment. "I can't say whether that would be luck or not, being an accepted that every sitter knew had almost had the Amarlin seat." "It has seldom happened," Bayonin said. "But a woman refused the Amarlin seat is usually exiled. The hall strives for harmony, and she could not help being a source of disharmony." Shiryam looked straight into Egwene's eyes as if to impress her words. "We surely would have been exiled. Mirella and Morvryn and I for certain, since we stood pledge for you. And likely Carlinia and Bayonin and Anaya as well." Her smile was abrupt. "But it did not happen that way. The new Amarlin is supposed to spend her first night in contemplation and prayer, but once Mirella finishes with those buttons, it might be best if we gave at least a little of it to telling you how matters stand in Salidar." They were all looking at her. Mirella was behind her, doing up the last button, but she could feel the woman's eyes. "Yes. Yes, I think that might be best." Chapter 36. The Amarlin is raised. Egwene raised her head from the pillows and looked around, for a moment surprised to find herself in a canopied bed in a large room. Early morning light spilled in at the windows, and a plumply pretty woman in a simple grey wool dress was setting a large white pitcher of hot water on the washstand. Chesa had been introduced to her last night as her maid, the Amarlin's maid. A covered tray already sat beside her comb and brush on a narrow table beneath a mirror with a silver-worked frame. The smell of hot bread and stewed pears drifted in the air. Anaya had prepared the room for Egwene's arrival. The furnishings still did not match, but they were the best Salidar had to offer, from the padded armchair upholstered in green silk, to the stand mirror in the corner, with all its gilding intact, to the ornately carved wardrobe where her belongings now hung. Unfortunately, Anaya's taste seemed to run heavily to frothy lace and frills. Both thickly bordered the canopy of the bed and the drawn-back bed curtains, and one or the other decked the table and its stool, the arms and legs of the padded chair, the coverlet Egwene had tossed on the floor, and the thin silk sheet that had followed. The curtains at the windows were lace, too. Egwene put her head back down. Lace edged the pillows as well. The room made her feel she might drown in lace. There had been a great deal of talk after Shiryam and the others brought her here to what they called the Little Tower, almost all of it on their side. They were not really interested in what she thought Rand was up to, or what Corrin and the others might want. There was an embassy on its way to Camelin under Mirana, who knew what to do, though they were rather vague about exactly what that was. For the most part, they did the talking, she the listening, her questions brushed aside. The answers to some were unimportant, she was told, for now anyway. Those that were answered got a quick gloss before they went on to what was important. Embassies had been sent off to every ruler, each one named in turn, with an explanation of why he or she was absolutely vital to Salidar's cause, which it seemed everyone was. They did not quite say everything would fail if even one ruler went against them, but the emphasis they laid on every one said it for them. Gareth Bryn was building an army that would eventually be strong enough to prosecute their, her, claims against Elida, if it came to that. They did not seem to think it would, despite Elida's demand that they return to the tower. They seemed to believe that once word of Egwene Alvear's elevation to the Amarlin seat was spread, Aes Sedai would come to her, even some of those in the tower now, enough that Elida would have no choice but to step down on demand. The White Cloaks were twiddling their thumbs for some reason, so Salidar was as safe as anywhere for as long as was necessary. That Loghain had been healed as well as Swan and Lyanna. Of course she would have been healed if she was here. It was just a surprise to find out she was. Came up almost in passing. Nothing to worry you there, Shiryam said soothingly. She stood over Egwene, who sat in the padded armchair, with the others in an arc around her. The hall will argue whether to gentle him again until old age relieves us of the problem. Egwene tried to stifle another yawn. It was getting late, and Anaya said, We need to let her sleep. Tomorrow is almost as important as tonight was, child. Abruptly, she laughed to herself softly. Mother. Tomorrow is important too, Mother. We will send Chesa to help you get ready for bed. Even after they left, going to bed was not easy. While Chesa was still undoing Egwene's dress, Romanda appeared with a number of suggestions for the Ammerlin, delivered in a firm, no-nonsense voice, and no sooner did she go than Lalaine came, as if the blue sitter had been waiting for the yellow's departure. Lalaine had her own helpful counsel, given with Egwene sitting up in bed after Chesa was gently but firmly put out of the room. It was not a bit like Romanda's advice. Neither was much like Shiryam's, and came with a warm, even affectionate smile, but with just as much certainty that Egwene would need a little guidance in her first months. Neither woman exactly said that she could guide Egwene to what was best for the tower better than Shiryam, or that Shiryam and her little circle might try to tug in too many directions, or that they might give bad advice, but the strong implications were there. Romanda and Lalaine also each hinted that the other might have her own agenda, one that undoubtedly would cause untold misery. By the time Egwene channeled the last lamp out, she expected a sleep full of nightmares. In fact, there were only two that she remembered the next morning. In one, she was Ammerlin, Aes Sedai, but without taking the oaths, and everything she did led to disaster. That wakened her bolt upright just to get away. Yet she was sure it was not a dream with meaning. It was much the same as one of her experiences inside the Turangrial, where she had been tested for accepted. As far as anyone knew, those had no connection to reality. Not to this reality. The other was the sort of foolishness she expected. She knew enough about her own dreams now to know that, even if she had to wake herself finally to escape that one as well. Shiryam had snatched the stole from her shoulders, and then everyone was laughing at her, and pointing at the fool who really believed a girl of barely 18 years could be Ammerlin. Not just the Aes Sedai, but all the wise ones, and Rand, and Perrin, and Matt, Nynaeve and Elaine, almost everyone she had ever met, while she stood there naked, desperately trying to put on an accepted's dress that might have fit a 10-year-old child. "Now you can't be lying abed all day, Mother." Egwene opened her eyes. Chesa had an expression of mock severity on her face and a twinkle in her eye. At least twice Egwene's age, at their first meeting, she had fallen straight into the blend of respect and familiarity that could be expected of an old retainer. "The Ammerlin seat can't be lying slug abed, not today of all days." "The last thing in my mind." Scrambling stiffly from the bed, Egwene stretched before pulling off her sweaty shift. She could not wait until she had worked long enough with the power to stop sweating. "I'll wear the blue silk with the white morning stars along the neckline." She noticed Chesa very carefully not looking as the woman handed her a fresh shift. The effects of meeting her toe had faded somewhat, but she still appeared faintly bruised. "I had an accident before I got here," she said, hurriedly thrusting her head through the new shift. Chesa nodded in sudden understanding. "Horses are wicked, untrustworthy beasts. You'll never get me on one, Mother. A good, sturdy cart is ever so much safer. If I fell off a horse like that, I'd never let on to a soul. Nildra would say such things. And Kaelin! Oh, you'd never believe the things some women can say the moment your back is turned. Of course, it's different for the Ammerlin seat, but that's what I'd do." Holding the wardrobe door open, she glanced sideways at Egwene to see whether she understood. Egwene smiled at her. "People are people, low or high," she said gravely. Chesa beamed for an instant before bringing out the blue dress. Shiryam might have chosen her, but she was the Ammerlin seat's maid, and her loyalty was to the Ammerlin seat. And she was right about today's importance, too. Eating quickly, despite Chase's murmurs to herself about how gulping food always upset the stomach, the warm milk with honey and spices was sovereign for settling a nervous stomach. Egwene scrubbed her teeth and washed hurriedly, let Chase take a few licks at her hair with the brush, and dressed as fast as the woman could get the blue silk over her head. Settling the seven-striped stole on her shoulders, she paused to look in the stand mirror. Stole or no stole, she did not look very much like the Amarlin seat. But I am. This is no dream. In the large room below, the tables stood as empty as they had in the night. Only the sitters were there, wearing their shawls and clustered according to Adja, and Shiriam standing alone. They quieted as Egwene descended the stair, curtsied when she reached the bottom. Romanda and Lilaine eyed her sharply, then turned away, very obviously not looking at Shiriam, and resumed their conversations. When Egwene remained silent, the others did the same. Occasionally one of them glanced at her. Even in whispers their voices sounded too loud. There was silence outside, utter stillness. Egwene plucked her handkerchief from her sleeve and patted her face. None of them sweated a drop. Shiriam came to stand beside her. "It will go well," she said softly. "Just remember what you are to say." That was another thing they had gone over in detail last night. Egwene had a speech to deliver this morning. Egwene nodded. It was strange. Her stomach should have been turning over, her knees shaking. They were not, and she could not understand. "There is no need to be anxious," Shiriam said. She sounded as if she thought Egwene was and meant to soothe her, but before she could open her mouth again, Romanda spoke loudly. "It is time." In a rustle of skirts, the sitters lined up according to age, with Romanda in the lead this time, and marched outside. Egwene moved to just short of the door. Still no flutters. Maybe Chesa was right about the warm milk. Silence still. Then Romanda's voice, too loud for nature. "We have an Amarlin seat." Egwene stepped outside into a heat she would not have expected until later in the day. As her foot left the stoop, it landed on a platform woven of air. The lines of sitters stretched out to either side of her, each sitter glowing with the light of Sidar. "Egwene Alvir," Romanda intoned, her voice carried by weaves of the power. "The Watcher of the Seals, the Flame of Tar Valon, the Amarlin Seat." They lifted her high as Romanda spoke, raising the Amarlin in truth until she stood just below the thatched roof, standing on thin air, it would seem, to any but a woman who could channel. There were plenty to see her outlined by the rising sun. A second weave made the light into a shimmering weave around her. Men and women packed the street. The crowd disappeared around corners. Every doorway was filled, every window, every rooftop except that of the little tower itself. A roar erupted that very nearly drowned out Romanda. Waves of cheering that rolled across the village. Egwene scanned the crowd, searching for Nynaeve and Elaine, but she could not find them in that sea of upturned faces. An age seemed to pass before there was quiet enough for her to speak. The weave that had carried Romanda's voice shifted to her. They had prepared her speech, Shiriam and the others, a weighty exhortation she might have been able to deliver without blushing if she was twice her age, or better yet, three times. She had made a few changes on her own. "We are gathered together in a quest for truth and justice that will not end until the false Amarlin Elida is removed from the place she usurped." The only change in that was "will not" for "cannot," but she thought it stronger and better. "As Amarlin, I will lead you in that quest, and I will not falter, as I know you will not." And that was quite enough exhortation. In any case, she had no intention of remaining up here long enough to repeat everything they wanted said. It all amounted to what she already had said anyway. "As my keeper of the chronicles, I name Shiriam Bayanar." That produced a much smaller cheer. A keeper was not an Amarlin, after all. Egwene glanced down, waiting until she saw Shiriam hurry outside, still draping her shoulders with the stole of the keeper, blue, to show she had been raised from the Blue Aja. It had been decided not to make a copy of the Ammerlin's staff, topped with a golden flame that the keeper carried, until the true staff was recovered from the White Tower. They would have to do without. Shiryam had been expecting a much longer wait, and she looked at Egwene with open exasperation. In the lines of sitters, Romanda and Lilaine wore no expression at all. Each had had her own very strong suggestion for keeper, and needless to say, neither had been Shiryam. Egwene drew breath and turned back to the waiting crowd. "In honor of this day, I hereby decree that all accepted and novices are absolved of penances and punishments." That was customary, and produced shouts of glee only from white-clad girls and a few accepted who forgot themselves. "In honor of this day, I hereby decree that Theodrin Dabe, Feolane Oranda, Nynaeve Almira, and Elaine Trakand are from this moment raised to the shawl, full sisters and Aes Sedai." A sort of questioning silence greeted that, with here and there a murmur. It was not according to custom at all, far from it. But it was said, and a good thing Morvern had happened to mention Theodrin and Feolane. Time to return to what they had written out for her. "I hereby decree this a day of feasting and celebration. Let no work be done but what is necessary for enjoyment. May the light shine on you all, and the Creator's hand shelter you." That last was swallowed by a tumultuous roar that overwhelmed the weave carrying her words. Some people began dancing in the street right there and then, though there was hardly room for them to move. The platform of air descended perhaps a trifle more quickly than it had risen. The sitters were staring at her when she stepped off, and the glow of Sidar began winking out among them almost before she touched ground. Shiryam darted up to take Egwene's arm, smiling at the stone-faced sitters. "I must show the Ammerlin her study. Forgive me." Egwene would not exactly have said Shiryam hustled her inside, but then again she would not exactly have said she did not. She did not think Shiryam would actually try to drag her, but it seemed best to gather her skirts with her free hand and take longer strides so as not to find out. Her study at the back of the waiting room turned out to be somewhat smaller than her bedroom, with two windows, a writing table, a straight-backed chair behind it, and two more in front. Nothing else. The beetle-ridden wall panels had been waxed to a dull shine, but the tabletop was quite bare. There was a piece of flowered carpet on the floor. "Forgive me if I was abrupt, mother," Shiryam said, releasing her arm. "But I thought we should speak privately before you spoke to any of the sitters. They all had a hand in writing your speech, and—" "I know I made a few changes," Egwene said with a bright smile. "But I felt such a mudgeon standing up there with all that to say." "All of them had a hand? No wonder it had sounded like a pompous old woman who could not stop talking." She almost laughed. "Anyway, I said what had to be said, the heart of it. Elida must be removed, and I will lead them to do it." "Yes," Shiryam said slowly. "But there might be a few questions about some of the other changes. Theodrin and Feolane will certainly be raised Aes Sedai as soon as we have the tower and the oath rod back, and very likely Elaine. But Nynaeve still can't light a candle unless she yanks her braid at people first." "That was exactly the point I wished to raise," Romanda said, coming in without knocking. "Mother," she added, after a distinct pause. Lilaine shut the door behind them, nearly in the faces of several other sitters. "It seemed necessary," Egwene said, widening her eyes. "I thought of it last night. I've been raised Aes Sedai without being tested or taking the three oaths, and if I was the only one, it would just point me out. With four others, I won't seem quite so odd anymore. Not to people here, at least. Elida might try to make something of it when she hears, but most folk know so little about Aes Sedai they won't know what to believe anyway. It is the people here who matter most. They must have confidence in me." Anyone but Aes Sedai would have gaped at her. As it was, Romanda very nearly spluttered. "That may be so," Lilaine began sharply, giving her blue-fringed shawl a jerk, then stopped. It was so. More, the Ammerlin seat had publicly decreed those women Aes Sedai. The hall might be able to keep them accepted, or whatever Theodrin and Faelaine were in their cases, but the hall could not erase memories, and it would not stop everyone knowing they had gone against the Ammerlin on her first day. A great deal that would do for confidence. "I hope, Mother," Romanda said in a tight voice, "that you will consult the hall first the next time. Going against custom can have unexpected consequences." "Going against law can have unfortunate ones," Lelaine said bluntly, tacking on a belated, "Mother." That was nonsense, or close to it. The conditions for being raised Aes Sedai were set in law, true, but the Ammerlin could decree almost anything she wished. Still, a wise Ammerlin did not jump into fights with the hall when they could be avoided. "Oh, I will consult in the future," Egwene told them earnestly. "But it did seem the right thing to do. Please, would you excuse me now? I really do need to speak with the Keeper." They practically quivered. Their curtsies were slight, their parting words perfectly correct so far as the words went, but muttered in Romanda's case, and in Lelaine's sharp enough to cut. "You handled that very well," Shiriam said when they were gone. She sounded surprised. "But you must remember the hall can make problems for any Ammerlin. One reason I am your keeper is so that I can advise you and keep you away from that sort of problem. You should ask me about any decrees you want to make. And if I'm not at hand, Mirella and Morvryn and the others. We are here to help you, Mother." "I understand, Shiriam. I promise to listen carefully to whatever you say. I'd like to see Nynaeve and Elaine, if that is possible." "It should be," Shiriam said, smiling, "though I may have to pull Nynaeve away from a yellow physically. Swan is coming to teach you about the etiquette of being Ammerlin. There is a great deal of it to learn, but I'll tell her to come a little later." Egwene stared at the door after Shiriam had gone. Then she turned and stared at the table. Absolutely bare. Not a report to be read. No records to study. Not so much as a pen and ink to write a note, much less a decree. And Swan coming to teach her etiquette. When a timid tap came at the door, she was still standing there. "Come," she said, wondering whether it was Swan or perhaps a servant with a snack of honey cakes, already cut into suitably small pieces. Nynaeve poked her head in hesitantly, then was pushed into the room by Elaine. Side by side, they made perfect deep curtsies, spreading white banded skirts wide and murmuring, "Mother." "Please don't do that," Egwene said. Actually, it was more of a wail. "You're the only two friends I have, and if you start..." Light, she was almost ready to cry. Elaine reached her first by a hair, throwing her arms around her. Nynaeve was silent, fiddling nervously with a slim silver bracelet, but not Elaine. "We're still your friends, Egwene, but you are the Ammerlin seat. Light, remember I told you one day you'd be the Ammerlin when I was..." Elaine grimaced faintly. "Well, in any case, you are. We can't just walk up to the Ammerlin and say, 'Egwene, does this dress make me look fat?' It would not be proper." "Yes, it would," Egwene said stoutly. "Well, in private," she allowed after a moment. "When we are alone, I want you to tell me a dress makes me look fat, or whatever you want." Smiling at Nynaeve, she tugged the woman's thick braid gently. Nynaeve gave a start. "And I want you to pull that at me if you feel like it. I need somebody who is Egwene's friend and doesn't see this bloody stole all the time, or I will go crazy. Speaking of dresses, why are you still in those? I thought sure you could be changed by now." Nynaeve did pull at her braid then. "That Nissau told me it must be some sort of mistake and dragged me off. She said she wasn't going to waste her turn just for a celebration." The sounds of it were beginning to rise outside, a general hum just loud enough to penetrate the stone walls, and a faint thread of music. "Well, it was no mistake," Egwene said. "Nissau's turn?" Well, she was not going to ask now. Nynaeve was not happy about it, and Egwene wanted this to be as happy an occasion as it could. Dragging the chair from behind the table, she saw two plump patchwork cushions on the seat and smiled. "Chesa. We are going to sit here and talk, and then I will help you find the two best dresses in Saladar. Tell me about these discoveries of yours. Anaya mentioned them, and Shiryam, but I could not make them hold still long enough to give me any details. Almost as one, the pair paused in the act of sitting and exchanging glances. Unaccountably, they seemed reluctant to talk of anything but Nynaeve's healing swan and Lyanna. Nynaeve repeated 3 times rather anxiously that healing Loghain had been an accident, and Elaine's work with Turangrian. Those were remarkable feats, especially Nynaeve's, but there was only so much they could say, and there were only so many times Egwene could tell them how marvelous what they had done was, and how much she envied them. Trying to demonstrate did not last long. Egwene had no real feel for healing, especially not this complicated tapestry Nynaeve wove without thought, and though she had an affinity for metals and very good strength in both fire and earth, Elaine lost her almost immediately. Of course they wanted to know what life was like among the Aiel. From the startled blinks and shocked laughs, abruptly cut off, she was not sure they believed everything she told them, and she certainly did not tell everything. The Aiel led naturally into Rand. Both women stared all through her rendition of his meeting with the Aes Sedai. They agreed that he was wading waters deeper than he knew, and needed someone to guide him before he stepped into a hole. Elaine thought Min might help with that, once the embassy reached Camelon. This was the first Egwene knew Min was with him, or had been in Saladar, though in truth Elaine seemed rather half-hearted. And she muttered something truly peculiar, as if it were a truth she did not like hearing. "Min is a better woman than I am." For some reason that got a sympathetic look from Nynaeve. "I wish I were there," Elaine went on in a stronger voice. "To guide him, I mean." She looked from Egwene to Nynaeve, red touching her cheeks. "Well, that too." Nynaeve and Egwene began laughing so hard they nearly fell out of their chairs, and Elaine joined in almost immediately. "There's one good thing to tell, Elaine," Egwene said breathlessly, still trying to recover. Then she realized exactly what she was going to say, and why. Light! What a mire she had stepped into, and while laughing. "I'm sorry about your mother, Elaine. You don't know how I wished I could offer my condolences before this." Elaine looked confused, as well she might. "The point is, Rand means to give you the Lion Throne and the Sun Throne." To her surprise, Elaine sat up very straight. "He does he?" she said in a cool, flat voice. "He intends to give them to me." Her chin rose slightly. "I have some claim to the Sun Throne, and if I choose to make it, I will do so in my own right. As for the Lion Throne, Randall Thor has no right, none, to give me what is mine already." "I'm sure he didn't mean it that way," Egwene protested. "Did he?" "He loves you, Elaine. I know he does." "If only it were that simple," Elaine muttered, whatever that was supposed to mean. Nynaeve sniffed. "Men always say they didn't mean it that way. You would think they spoke a different language." "When I put my hands on him again," Elaine said firmly, "I will teach him to speak the right language. Give me." It was all Egwene could do not to laugh again. The next time Elaine laid hands on Rand, she would be too busy hunting a secluded spot to teach him anything. This was very like old times. "Now your Aes Sedai, you can go to him any time you want. Nobody can stop you." A quick look passed between the pair. "The hall isn't letting anyone just pick up and leave," Nynaeve said. "And even if she could, we found something I think is more important." Elaine nodded vigorously. "I think so, too. I'll admit the first thought I had when I heard you announced Amarlin was that now maybe Nynaeve and I could go find it. Well, the second. The first was a sort of stunned joy." Egwene blinked in confusion. "You found something, but now you need to find it." Leaning forward in their chairs, they answered eagerly and almost on top of one another. "We found it," Elaine said, "but only until I run Riod." "We used need," Nynaeve added. "We certainly needed something." "It's a bowl," Elaine continued, "a Turangrial, and I think it might be strong enough to change the weather." Only the mole is somewhere in Ebu Dar, in an awful tangled warren of streets with no signs or anything to help. The hall sent a letter to Merlilla, but she'll never find it. Especially since she is supposed to be busy convincing Queen Tylin that the real White Tower is here. We told them it needed a man in the channeling, Nynaeve sighed. Of course, that was before Loghain, though I don't think they would trust him. It doesn't really need a man, Elaine said. We just wanted to make them believe they needed Rand. I don't know how many women it does need. Maybe a full circle of 13. Elaine says it's very powerful, Egwene. It could make the weather right again. I'd welcome that, just to get my weather sense straight again. The bowl can make it right, Egwene. Elaine exchanged happy looks with Nynaeve. All you have to do is send us to Ebu Dar. The flood receded, and Egwene leaned back in her chair. I will do what I can. Maybe there'll be no objection now that your eyes Sedai. She had the feeling there would be, though. Raising them had seemed such a bold stroke, but she was beginning to believe it was not quite so simple. What you can? Elaine said incredulously. You are the Amarlin's seat, Egwene. You give a command, and Aes Sedai jump. She flashed a quick grin. Say jump, and I'll prove it. Grimacing, Egwene shifted on the cushions. I'm the Amarlin, but... Elaine, Shiriam doesn't have to think very hard to recall a novice named Egwene staring goggle-eyed at everything and being sent to rake the new garden walks for eating apples after bedtime. She means to lead me by the hand, or maybe push me by the scruff of my neck. Romanda and Lilaine both wanted to be Amarlin, and they see that novice, too. They intend to show me where to put my feet as much as Shiriam does. Nynaeve frowned worriedly, but Elaine was pure indignation. You can't let them get away with trying to bully you. You are the Amarlin. The Amarlin tells the hall what to do, not the other way around. You have to stand up and make them see the Amarlin seat. Egwene's laugh had a touch of bitterness. Had it only been last night that she was so defiant about being bullied? That will take a little time, Elaine. You see, I finally understood why they chose me. Part is for Rand, I think. Maybe they believe he'll be more amenable if he sees me wearing the stole. The other part is because they remember that novice. A woman, no, a girl, who's so used to doing as she's told that there will be no trouble making her do as they want. She fingered the striped stole around her neck. Well, whatever their reasons, they chose me Amarlin, and since they did, I mean to be Amarlin, but I have to be careful, at first anyway. Maybe Swan made the hall jump every time she frowned. She wondered whether that had ever been true. But if I try that, I might just be the first Amarlin ever deposed the day after she was raised. Elaine looked dumbfounded, but Nynaeve nodded slowly. Perhaps being wisdom and dealing with the women's circle back home had given her more insight into how the Amarlin seat and the hall of the tower actually worked together than all of Elaine's training to be queen. Elaine, once word spreads and rulers know about me, I can begin making the hall realize they chose an Amarlin, not a puppet. But until then, they really could take this stole away as fast as they gave it. I mean, if I'm not really Amarlin, then it isn't hard to push me aside. There might be a few mutters, but I have no doubt they could smooth those over fast enough. If anyone outside Saldidar ever heard somebody named Egwene Alvir was raised Amarlin, it would just be one of those peculiar rumors that grow up around Aes Sedai. What are you going to do? Elaine asked quietly. You are not going to accept it meekly. That made Egwene smile wholeheartedly. It was not a question, but a firm statement of fact. No, I am not. She had listened to a number of Moiraine's lectures to Rand about the game of houses. Back then, she had thought the game absurd and worse than underhanded. Now she hoped she could remember everything she had heard. The Aiel always said, use the weapons you have. It may help that they're trying to fit me for three different leashes. I can pretend to be pulled by one or the other, depending on which is closest to what I want to do. Once in a while, I can do just what I want, the way I did raising you two, but not very often yet. Squaring her shoulders, she met their gazes levelly. I would like to say I raised you because you deserved it, But the truth is I did it because you're my friends, and because I hope as full sisters you can help me. I certainly don't know who else I can trust except you two. I will send you to Ebu Dar as soon as I can, but before and after you are who I can discuss things with. I know you will tell me the truth. That trip to Ebu Dar may not take as long as you might think. You too have made all sorts of discoveries, so I hear, but if I can puzzle a few things out, I may have one of my own. That will be wonderful, Elaine said, but she sounded almost absent-minded. Chapter 37. When Battle Begins. The silence was very peculiar, and Egwene did not understand at all. Elaine looked at Nynaeve, then they both looked at Nynaeve's slim silver bracelet. Nynaeve shifted her gaze to Egwene, wide-eyed, and quickly put it on the floor. "I have a confession," she said in a near whisper. Her voice never rose, but words spilled out in a rush. "I captured Mogedion." Without raising her eyes, she lifted her wrist with the bracelet. "This is an Idom. We're holding her prisoner, and nobody knows, except Swan and Lyanna and Birgitta, and now you." "We had to," Elaine said, leaning forward urgently. "They'd have executed her, Egwene. I know she deserves it, but her head is full of knowledge, things we hardly dream of. That's where all of our discoveries came from. Except Nynaeve's healing Swan and Lyanna and Loghain, and my Turangrial. They would have killed her without waiting to learn anything." Questions whirled through Egwene's head dizzyingly. They had captured one of the Forsaken? How? Elaine had made an Idom? Egwene shivered, barely able to look at the thing. It looked nothing like the Idom she knew far too well. Even with that, how had they managed to keep one of the Forsaken hidden among so many Aes Sedai? One of the Forsaken, prisoner, not tried and executed. As suspicious as Rand had become, if he ever discovered that, he would never trust Elaine again. "Bring her here," she managed to say hollowly. Nynaeve bounced out of her chair and ran. The noises of celebration, laughter and music and song swelled for a moment before the door banged shut behind her. Egwene rubbed her temples. "One of the Forsaken? That is quite a secret to keep." Elaine's cheeks colored. "Why, under the light? Of course." "Elaine, I have no intention of asking about anybody I'm not supposed to know about." The golden-haired woman actually jumped. I may be able to talk. Later. Tomorrow, maybe." "Egwene, you have to promise me you won't say anything, not to anybody, unless I say so. No matter what you see." "If that's what you want." Egwene did not understand why the other woman was so agitated. Not really. Elaine had a secret that Egwene shared, only Egwene had found out by accident, and ever since they had both been pretending it was still Elaine's secret alone. She had met with Birgitta, the hero out of legend, in Telairan Riod. Maybe she still did. Wait, that was what Nynaeve had said. Birgitta knew about Mogedion. Did she mean the woman waiting in Telairan Riod for the Horn of Valier to call her back? Nynaeve knew the secret that Elaine had refused to admit to Egwene, even when she was caught out? No. This was not going to turn into a round of accusations and denials. "Elaine, I am the Amyrlin. Really the Amyrlin, and I already have plans. The wise ones who channel handle a good many of their weaves differently from Aes Sedai." Elaine already knew about the wise ones, though come to think of it, Egwene did not know whether the Aes Sedai did, the other Aes Sedai now. Sometimes what they do is more complicated or more crude, but at times it's simpler than we were taught in the Tower, and works just as well. "You want Aes Sedai to study with the Aiel?" Elaine's mouth quirked in amusement. "Egwene, they'll never agree to that. Not if you live 1,000 years. I suppose they'll want to test Aiel girls for novices when they find out, though." Shifting on her cushions, Egwene hesitated. Aes Sedai studying with the wise ones? As apprentices? It would never happen. But Romanda and Lelaine especially might benefit from a little Gito, and Shiriam, and Mirella, and... She found a more comfortable way to sit and gave up her fancies. I doubt the wise ones will agree to Aiel girls becoming novices. They might have once, possibly, but certainly not now. Now it would be as much as Egwene could expect for them to speak civilly to Aes Sedai. I thought some sort of association. Elaine, there are fewer than 1,000 Aes Sedai. If you include those who remain in the waste, I think there are more wise ones who can channel than there are Aes Sedai. Maybe many more. Anyway, they don't miss a one with the spark born in her. How many women had died on this side of the Dragon Wall because they suddenly could channel, maybe without realizing what they were doing at all, and had no one to teach them? I want to bring in more women, Elaine. What about women who can learn, but no Aes Sedai found them before they were thought too old for novices? I say if she wants to learn, let her try, even if she's 40 or 50, or her grandchildren have grandchildren. Elaine hugged herself, laughing. Oh, Egwene, the Accepted will just love teaching those novice classes. They'll have to learn how, Egwene said firmly. She did not see the problem. Aes Sedai had always said you could be too old for a novice, but if you wanted to learn... They had changed their minds partway already. In the crowd she had seen faces older than Nynaeve's above novice white. The Tower has always been severe about excluding people, Elaine. If you aren't strong enough, you're put out. Refuse to take a test and you're sent away. Fail a test and out. They should be allowed to stay if they want. But the tests are to make sure you're strong enough, Elaine protested. Not just in the one power, in yourself. Surely you don't want Aes Sedai who will break the first time they come under pressure, or Aes Sedai who can barely channel? Egwene sniffed. Cerulea would have been put out of the Tower without ever being tested for Accepted. Maybe they can't be Aes Sedai, but that doesn't mean they are useless. After all, they're already trusted to use the power with at least some discretion, or they wouldn't be sent off into the world. My dream is for every woman who can channel to be connected to the Tower somehow. Every last one. The Windfinders? Elaine winced when Egwene nodded. You didn't betray them, Elaine. I can't believe they kept their secret as long as they did. Elaine sighed heavily. Well, what's done is done. You can't put honey back in the comb. But if your Aiel get special protection, the Sea Folk should too. Let the Windfinders teach their girls. No Sea Folk women bundled off by Aes Sedai, whatever they will. Done. Egwene spat on her palm and held out her hand, and after a moment Elaine spat on hers and grinned as they clasped to seal the bargain. Slowly that grin faded. Is this about Rand and his amnesty, Egwene? In part. Elaine, how could the man be so... There was no way to finish that, and no answer anyway. The other woman nodded a touch sadly, in understanding or agreement or both. The door opened, and a sturdy woman in dark wool appeared, a silver tray in her hands with 3 silver cups and a long-necked silver wine pitcher. Her face was worn, a farm wife's face, but her dark eyes glittered as she studied Egwene and Elaine with a shifting gaze. Egwene had just a moment to feel surprised that the woman wore a close-fitting silver necklace despite her drab dress, and then Nynaeve entered behind her, shutting the door. She must have run like the wind, because she had found time to exchange the Accepted's dress for a dark blue silk, embroidered with golden scrolls around the neckline and hem. It was not nearly so low-cut as what Berylaine wore, but still considerably lower than Egwene expected to see on Nynaeve. "This is Marigan," Nynaeve said, drawing her braid over her shoulder in a practiced motion. Her great serpent ring shone golden on her right hand. Egwene started to ask why she emphasized the name so, then abruptly realized that Marigan's necklace was a match for the bracelet on Nynaeve's wrist. She could not help staring. The woman certainly did not look anything like she expected one of the Forsaken to look. She said as much, and Nynaeve laughed. "Watch, Egwene." She did more than watch. She nearly leaped out of her chair, and she did embrace Sidar. As soon as Nynaeve spoke, the glow had surrounded Marigan, only for an instant, but before it faded, the woman in the plain wool dress changed completely. Actually, they were rather small changes, but they added up to a different woman, handsome rather than beautiful, but not at all worn, a woman who was proud, even regal. Only the eyes remained the same, glittering, but no matter how they shifted, Egwene could believe this woman was Mogedion. "How?" was all she said. She listened carefully as Nynaeve and Elaine explained about weaving disguises and inverting weaves, but she watched Mogedion. She was proud, and full of herself, full of being herself again. "Put her back," Egwene said when the explanations were done. Again, the glow of Saidar lasted only moments, and once it faded, there were no weaves that she could see. Mogedion was plain and worn again, a countrywoman who had led a hard life and looked older than her years. Those black eyes glittered at Egwene, filled with hate, and maybe self-loathing as well. Realizing she still held Saidar, Egwene felt foolish for a moment. Neither Nynaeve nor Elaine had embraced the source. But then Nynaeve was wearing that bracelet. Egwene stood, never taking her gaze from Mogedion, and held out her hand. If anything, Nynaeve seemed eager to have the thing off her wrist, which Egwene could understand. Handing the bracelet over, Nynaeve said, "Put the tray on the table, Marigan, and be on your best behavior. Egwene has been living with the Aiel." Egwene turned the silver band over in her hands and tried not to shiver. Cunning work, segmented so cleverly it almost appeared solid. She had been on the other end of an Idom once, a Shanchan device with a silver leash connecting necklace and bracelet, but still the same. Her stomach roiled as it had not facing the hall or the crowd. It stewed as though trying to make up for being still before. Deliberately she closed the length of silver around her wrist. She had some idea of what to expect, but she still almost jumped. The other woman's emotions were laid out before her, her physical state, all gathered in one fenced-off portion of Egwene's mind. Mainly there was pulsing fear, but the self-loathing she had thought she saw swelled nearly as strongly. Mogedion did not like her present appearance. Maybe she especially did not like it after a short return to her own. Egwene thought of who it was she was looking at. One of the Forsaken, a woman whose name had been used to frighten children for centuries, a woman whose crimes deserved death 100 times over. She thought of the knowledge in that head. She made herself smile. It was not a pretty smile. She did not mean it to be, but she did not think she could have made it one if she tried. "They're right. I have been living with the Aiel. So if you expect me to be as gentle as Nynaeve and Elaine, put it out of your mind. Set just one foot wrong with me, and I'll make you beg for death. Only I won't kill you. I will just find some way to make that face permanent. On the other hand, if you do more than put a foot wrong..." She widened her smile until it was just showing teeth. The fear leaped so high it drowned everything else and bulged against the fence. Standing in front of the table, Mogedion clutched her skirts white-knuckle tight and trembled visibly. Nynaeve and Elaine were looking at Egwene as if they had never seen her before. Light! Did they expect her to be polite to one of the Forsaken? Cerulea would stake the woman out in the sun to bring her to heel, if she did not simply slit her throat out of hand. Egwene moved closer to Mogedion. The other woman was taller, but she cowered back against the table, knocking over the wine cups on their tray and rocking the pitcher. Egwene made her voice cold. It did not have far to go. "The day I detect one lie out of you is the day I execute you myself. Now, I have considered traveling from one place to another by boring a hole, so to speak, from here to there. A hole through the pattern, so there's no distance between one end and the other. How well will that work?" "Not at all for you or any woman," Mogedion said, breathless and quick. The fear that boiled inside was plain on her face now. "That is how men travel." The capital was plain. She was speaking of one of the lost talents. "If you try, you will be sucked into, I don't know what it is, the space between the threads of the pattern, maybe. I don't think you would live very long. I know you would never come back. Traveling, Nynaeve muttered disgustedly. We never thought of traveling. No, we didn't. Elaine sounded no more pleased with herself. I wonder what else we never thought of. Egwene ignored them. Then how? She asked softly. A quiet voice was always better than shouting. Mogedion flinched as though she had shouted anyway. You make the two places in the pattern identical. I can show you how. It takes a little effort because of the necklace, but I can... Like this, Egwene said, embracing Sidar, and wove flows of spirit. This time she was not trying to touch the world of dreams, but she expected something much the same if it worked. What she got was quite different. The thin curtain she wove did not produce the shimmering effect, and it lasted only a moment before snapping together in a vertical line that was suddenly a slash of silvery blue light. The light itself widened quickly, or perhaps turned, it looked that way to her, into something. There in the middle of the floor was a doorway, not at all the misty view she had had of Telairun Riad from her tent. A doorway opening onto a sun-blasted land that made the worst of the drought here look lush. Stone spires and sharp cliffs loomed over a dusty yellow clay plain cut by fissures and dotted with a few scrub bushes that had a thorny look even at a distance. Egwene very nearly stared. That was the Aiel Waste, halfway between Coldrock's Hold and the Valley of Roydian, a spot where it was very unlikely there would be anyone to see or be hurt. Rand's precautions with his special room in the Sun Palace had suggested she take some too, but she had only hoped to reach it, and she had been sure it would be seen through a shimmering curtain. Light, Elaine breathed. Do you know what you've done, Egwene? Do you? I think I can do it. If you repeat the weave again, I know I'll remember. Remember what? Nynaeve practically wailed. How did she do it? Oh, curse this cursed block! Elaine, kick my ankle, please! Mogedion's face had gone very still. Uncertainty rolled through the bracelet almost as heavily as fear. Reading emotions was hardly like reading words on a page, but those two were clear. Who? Mogedion licked her lips. Who taught you that? Egwene smiled as she had seen Aes Sedai smile. At least she hoped it conveyed mystery. Never be too sure I don't already know the answer, she said coolly. Remember, lie to me once. Suddenly it occurred to her how this must sound to Nynaeve and Elaine. They had captured the woman, held her captive in the most impossible circumstances, pried all sorts of information out of her. Turning to them, she gave a small, rueful laugh. I am sorry. I didn't mean to just take over. Why should you be sorry? Elaine wore a broad smile. You are supposed to take over, Egwene. Nynaeve gave her braid a yank, then glared at it. Nothing seems to work. Why can't I get angry? Oh, you can keep her forever for all of me. We couldn't take her to Ebu Dar anyway. Why can't I get angry? Oh, blood and bloody ashes! Her eyes went wide as she realized what she had said, and she clapped a hand over her mouth. Egwene glanced at Mogedion. The woman was busily setting the wine cups upright again and pouring wine with a smell of sweet spices, but something had come through the bracelet while Nynaeve was talking. Shock, perhaps? Maybe she would prefer the mistress she knew to one who threatened death in almost her first breath. A firm knock sounded at the door, and Egwene hastily released Sidar. The opening to the waste vanished. Come. Swan took one step into the study and stopped, taking in Mogedion, the bracelet on Egwene's wrist, Nynaeve and Elaine. Shutting the door, she made a curtsy as minimal as anything from Romanda or Lelaine. Mother, I've come to instruct you in etiquette, but if you would rather I returned later? Her eyebrows rose, calmly questioning. Go, Egwene told Mogedion. If Nynaeve and Elaine were willing to let her run loose, the Eidam must limit her, if not as much as one with a leash. Fingering the bracelet, She hated the thing, but she intended to wear it day and night. She added, "But keep yourself available. I'll treat trying to escape the same as a lie." Fear gushed through the eidom as Mogedion scurried out. That could be a problem. How had Nynaeve and Elaine lived with those torrents of dread? Still, that was for later. Facing Swan, she folded her arms beneath her breasts. "This won't do, Swan. I know everything. Daughter." Swan tilted her head. "Sometimes knowing gives no advantage whatsoever. Sometimes it only means sharing the danger." "Swan," Elaine said, half shocked and half warning, and to Egwene's surprise, Swan did something she had never expected to see Swan Sanche do. She blushed. "You can't expect me to become somebody else overnight," the woman muttered grumpily. Egwene suspected Nynaeve and Elaine could help with what she had to do, but if she was really going to be Amyrlin, she had to do it alone. "Elaine, I know you want to get out of that accepted's dress. Why don't you do that, and then see what you find out about lost talents? Nynaeve, you do the same." A look passed between them, then they glanced at Swan and rose to make perfect curtsies, respectfully murmuring, "As you command, mother." There was no evidence of any impression on Swan. She stood watching Egwene with a wry expression while they left. Egwene embraced Sidar again, briefly, to slide her chair back into place behind the table, then adjusted her stole and sat. For a long moment she regarded Swan silently. "I need you," she said at last. "You know what it is to be Amyrlin, what the Amyrlin can and cannot do. You know the sitters, how they think, what they want. I need you, and I mean to have you. Shiryam and Ramonda and Lilaine may think I still wear novice white under this stole, maybe they all do, but you are going to help me show them differently. I'm not asking you, Swan. I will have your help." All there was to do then was wait. Swan regarded her, then gave a slight shake of her head and laughed softly. "They made a very bad mistake, didn't they? Of course I made it first. The plump little grunter for the table turns out to be a live silver pike as long as your leg." Spreading her skirts wide, she made a deep curtsy, inclining her head. "Mother, please allow me to serve and advise." "So long as you know it's only advice, Swan. I have too many people already who think they can tie strings to my arms and legs. I won't put up with it from you." "I'd as soon try tying strings to myself," Swan said dryly. "You know, I never really liked you. Maybe it was because I saw too much of myself in you." "In that case," Egwene said in just as dry a tone, "you can call me Egwene when we're alone. Now sit down and tell me why the hall is still sitting here, and how I can get them moving." Swan started to pull one of the chairs over before remembering she could move it with Sidar now. "They are sitting because once they move, the White Tower really is broken. As for how to get them moving, my advice..." Her advice took a long time. Some of it went along lines Egwene had already thought of, and all of it seemed good. In her room in the little tower, Ramonda poured mint tea for three other sitters, only one a yellow. The room was in the back, but the sounds of festival penetrated. Ramonda ignored them studiously. These three had been ready to support her for the Amyrlin seat. Voting for the girl had been as much a way to keep Lilaine from being raised as anything else. Lilaine would burn if she ever knew that. Now that Shiryam had her child Amyrlin installed, these three were still willing to listen, especially after the business of raising accepted to the shawl by decree. That had to be Shiryam's doing. She and her little clique had pampered all four. It had been their notion to lift Theodrin and Phelan above the other accepted, and they had suggested it for Elaine and Nynaeve as well at one time. Frowning, she wondered what was keeping Delana, but she began talking anyway, after sheathing the room in Sidar against eavesdropping. Delana would just have to catch up when she came. The important thing was that Shiryam was going to learn she had not gained as much power as she thought by snatching the job of keeper. In a house halfway across Salidar, Lalaine was serving chilled wine to four sitters, only one from her own blue Aja. Sidar laced the room against listeners. The sounds of celebration made her smile. The four women with her had suggested she try for the Ammerlin seat herself, and she had not been reluctant, but a failure would have meant Ramonda being raised instead, which would have pained Lalaine as much as being exiled. How Ramonda would gnash her teeth if she ever learned they had all voted for the child, just to keep the stole from Ramonda's own shoulders. What they had gathered to discuss, though, was how to lessen Shiriam's influence now she had managed to grab the Keeper's stole. That farce of raising accepted to Aes Sedai by the girl's decree. Shiriam's head must have swollen to madness. As the talk went on, Lalaine began to wonder where Delana was. She should have been there by now. Delana sat in her room, staring at Halima perched on the edge of Delana's bed. The name Asangar was never to be used. Sometimes Delana was afraid Halima would know, if she even thought it. The ward against eavesdropping was small, enclosing just the pair of them. "That is madness," she managed at last. "Don't you understand? If I continue to try supporting every faction, they will catch me out sooner or later." "Everyone must take some risks." The firmness of the woman's voice belied the smile on that lush mouth. "And you will continue to press for gentling Loghain again. That or killing him." A slight grimace actually made the woman more beautiful somehow. "If they ever brought him out of that house, I would attend to it myself." Delana could not imagine how, but she would not doubt the woman until she failed. "What I don't understand is why you are so afraid of a man with six sisters shielding him from sunup to sunup." Halima's green eyes blazed as she leaped to her feet. "I am not afraid, and don't you ever suggest it. I want Loghain severed or dead, and that is all you have to know. Do we understand one another?" Not for the first time Delana considered killing the other woman, but as always she had a sinking certainty that she would be the one to die. Somehow Halima knew when she embraced Sidar, even if Halima could not channel herself. The worst of it was the possibility that because Halima needed her, she would not kill her. Delana could not imagine what she might do instead, but the very vagueness of the threat made her shudder. She should be able to kill the woman right there, right then. "Yes, Halima," she said meekly, and hated herself for it. "So good of you," Swan murmured, holding her cup for Lalaine to add a small splash of brandy in her tea. The sun was sinking toward the horizon, giving the light a reddish cast, but the streets outside were still raucous. "You have no idea how tiring it is trying to teach that girl etiquette. She seemed to think as long as she behaves like a wisdom from back home, everything will be fine. The hall is supposed to be the women's circle or some such thing." Lalaine made sympathetic noises over her own tea. "You say she was complaining about Ramonda?" Swan shrugged. "Something about Ramonda insisting we stay here instead of marching for Tar Valon, as near as I could make out. Like, the girl has a temper like a fisher bird in mating season. I almost wanted to take her by the shoulders and shake her. But, of course, she does wear the stole now. Well, once I finish my lectures, I'm done with her. Do you remember?" Smiling inside, Swan watched Lalaine drinking it all in with the tea. Only the first sentence had really been important. The bit about a temper was her own addition, but it might make some of the sitters walk a little more carefully around Egwene. Besides, she suspected it might be true. She would never be Ammerlin again herself, and she was fairly certain that trying to manipulate Egwene would be as futile as trying to manipulate herself had been, and as painful. Yet teaching an Ammerlin to be Ammerlin, she looked forward to that as much as she had anything in a long time. Egwene Alvear would be an Ammerlin to make thrones tremble. "But what about my block?" Nynaeve said, and Ramonda frowned at her. They were in Ramonda's room in the little tower, and this was when Ramonda was supposed to have her according to the schedule the Yellows had set up. The music and laughter outside seemed to irritate the Yellow. "You weren't so eager earlier. I heard that you told Dagdara you were Aes Sedai too, and she could find a lake and douse her head." Heat rose in Nynaeve's face. Trust her temper to get in the way. Maybe I just realized that being Aes Sedai doesn't mean I can channel any more easily than before. Romanda sniffed. Aes Sedai. You have a long way to go for that, whatever. Very well, then. Something we haven't tried before. Jump up and down on one foot. And talk. She sat down in a carved armchair near the bed, still frowning. Gossip, I think. Talk about light things. For instance, what was it the Ammerlin said Lelaine wanted to talk about? For a moment, Nynaeve stared back indignantly. Jump on one foot? That was ridiculous! Still, she was not really here about her block anyway. Lifting her skirts, she began jumping. Egwene, the Ammerlin, didn't say much. Something about having to stay put in Salidar. This had better work, or Egwene was going to hear a few choice words, Ammerlin or no. I think this one will work better, Shiriam, Elaine said, handing over a twisted blue and red-flecked ring of what had been stone this morning. In truth, it was no different from any other she had made. They stood apart from the crowd, at the mouth of a narrow alley lit by the red sun. Behind them, fiddles squealed and flutes sang. Thank you, Elaine. Shiriam tucked the Tarangrial into her belt pouch without even looking at it. Elaine had caught Shiriam in a pause from dancing, her face a little flushed beneath all that cool Aes Sedai serenity. But the clear green gaze that had made